Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It is now time to open Texas 100%. Everybody who wants to work should have that opportunity. Every business that wants to be open should be open. Texans have mastered the daily habits to avoid getting COVID.
All right, Texas Governor Greg Abbott rushing to reopen despite a deadly threat.
I've heard this before somewhere. What? Where have I heard this before?
The plot line feels so familiar.
Feels really familiar.
What is it?
I'm pleased and happy to repeat the news that we have, in fact, caught and killed a large predator that supposedly injured some bathers. But as you see, it's a beautiful day, the beaches are open, and people are having a wonderful time. Amity, as you know, means friendship.
There you go.
Jaws. Yeah, Willie, there's so many things that Republicans do that make them the party of gestures. This could be a, of course, deadly gesture, but Greg Abbott understands, I hope, that we understand that he is doing this and putting people's lives in danger because he's trying to move past a crisis of his making where people died, they froze to death, they didn't have drinkable water for weeks. So he's trying to change the subject when he knows that if he just waits a month, the way vaccines are rolling out, he would be able to make that announcement safely. But no, this
two
is
months.
All.
Yeah.
We learned from CPAC that, you know, the people that act the most recklessly are the ones that are the most rewarded.
Yeah, that's the frustration. You just put your finger on it, that public health experts say, wait, we're this close to the finish line. The light at the end of the tunnel is getting closer every day. Why now? In fact, 2 days ago, the CDC expressed public concern about states at this moment rolling back things like mask mandates and capacities in restaurants, minimum capacities in restaurants, just because we are getting the vaccine out to people now. Johnson & Johnson just added as a third weapon in this fight against coronavirus. And so you heard the exasperation from CDC officials and from public health experts yesterday saying, why now, Texas? Give yourself even a month and it would be better than now than to just throw the doors open on the state wide open and to put it on the people individually, which I guess is the point of this, as they said, to restore freedom. If you want to wear a mask, if you think that's best for you and your family, wear one, but we're not going to mandate it, says the governor of Texas.
Well, I mean, and again, you look at CPAC and the people that got the biggest cheers there, not the people that are going to win elections, mind you, but the people who got the biggest cheers there were the people that were most reckless and irresponsible. Ron DeSantis, which he's used his stupidity on addressing COVID as actually his calling card for running for president in 2024. He's ahead in a lot of those straw polls in CPAC. Kristi Noem, who was stupid enough, thought she was being cool on 4th of July to say, we're having this big event, and no, you don't have to wear masks, and no, there's not going to be social distancing. This was back in July, of course, when we were in, obviously, like now, we're in the middle of it. I think Herman Cain had just passed away or had just gotten it, but it was an especially reckless time for her to be that cavalier about it. And of course, rates in her state have been spiking, but she just doesn't care. She doesn't care at all because it's all at the end of the day about owning the libs. And to these demagogues, actually owning the libs now means owning science,
right?
Owning medicine, owning reason, owning rationality. It is a dead end street for Donald Trump's Republican Party. And, you know, that's something that the Wall Street Journal editorial page wrote about yesterday. But it's certainly not a memo that Greg Abbott got.
Yeah, they're, I'd say, Trump wannabes. But here's why Governor Abbott could have waited a month or two before making the move that he just made. President Joe Biden announced yesterday that the U.S. will have enough COVID vaccines for every adult by the end of May, 2 months earlier than expected.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May. The prior administration had contracted for not nearly enough vaccine to cover adults in America. We rectified that. About 3 weeks ago, we were able to say that we'll have enough vaccine supply for adults by the end of July. This country will have enough vaccine supply, I'll say it again, for every adult in America by the end of May.
Wow. The White House also officially announced the news that broke at the end of our show yesterday that the administration is using its powers under the Defense Production Act to help drug maker Merck produce rival Johnson & Johnson's newly approved one-shot vaccine. Joe, it's night and day, this administration, compared to the last.
Well, it certainly is in terms of logistics.
Yes.
You look at the last administration, and the Trump administration did implement Operation Warp Speed. We moved towards a vaccine and moved towards a vaccine with extraordinary speed. By the time the Biden administration finally got in there, they understood they had the possibility of getting these vaccinations out to everybody. But obviously, President Trump was horrific when it came to logistics. His team was just terrible when it came to logistics. They understood that and immediately started working quickly. And Claire McCaskill, because of Operation Warp Speed in the last administration, and because of Joe Biden's teams actually being filled with professionals, people who understand logistics and were more interested in performance than just gestures, they're going to get these vaccines out to every single American by the end of May. That's remarkable. It means
incredible.
You know what? We just may have something approaching a normal summer.
Yeah, it's very exciting. They have done a great job of ramping up the amount of vaccine available. There are still problems, though, Joe, in terms of getting these into the arms of people. My state's a good example. I mean, we have a governor who opened mass vaccination sites everywhere except the densely populated urban areas. We've got situations where there's hundreds of shots going wasted in rural communities. Whereas if you're in Kansas City or St. Louis, you feel like you're in a game show trying to figure out how you can get the shot. So there are still wrinkles to work out, and we have to be mindful. I get really nervous when people forget that we still have 50,000 people a day that are contracting this disease and over 1,000 deaths a day. So I think there is a lot of reason to be optimistic, but there's still problems. This COVID relief bill is not just window dressing. It contains the money to help open schools and also get these vaccines in people's arms by the end of May so we can have a 4th of July that's much different than last 4th of July.
Yeah, and the vaccines will be ready for all adults, the Biden administration announced, by the end of May. But as Claire points out, then you have to get them into the arms of all those people. So, again, moving the timeline up by 2 months is great news. That deal between Merck and Johnson & Johnson is great news. You just got to get people to get that vaccine right now, and the situation in Texas certainly doesn't help. In a few minutes, we're going to bring in Dr. Zeke Emanuel for more on these new developments on COVID. We'll also show you the great Dolly Parton, as she put it, getting a dose of her own medicine. She gave $1 million to Vanderbilt University Medical Center for the development of the Moderna vaccine. And yesterday, she got the shot that she helped to pay for. We'll tell you more about that in just a minute.
So cool.
Let's turn, though, to yesterday's testimony from FBI Director Christopher Wray, speaking for the first time since the deadly riot on the U.S. Capitol on January 6. Director Wray appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee and defended the Bureau's handling of intelligence prior to the attack. that indicated there could be violence. He called the siege domestic terrorism and told lawmakers the Bureau is deploying intense resources to pursue the perpetrators of the attack.
That siege was criminal behavior, plain and simple, and it's behavior that we, the FBI, view as domestic terrorism. It's got no place in our democracy, and tolerating it would make a mockery of our nation's rule of law. January 6th was not an isolated event. The problem of domestic terrorism has been metastasizing across the country for a long time now, and it's not going away anytime soon. At the FBI, we've been sounding the alarm on it for a number of years now. So whenever we've had the chance, we've tried to emphasize that this is a top concern and remains so for the FBI. The information was raw. It was unverified. In a perfect world, we would have taken longer to be able to figure out whether it was reliable. Now, I didn't see the report myself even until after the 6th. But the way in which it handled, at least as I understand it, strikes me as consistent with our normal process. And that raw, unverified information was passed within, I think, 40 minutes to an hour to our partners, including the Capitol Police, including Metro PD, in not one, not two, but three different ways, one email, one verbal, and one through the law enforcement portal. As to why the information didn't flow to all the people within the various departments that they would prefer, I don't have a good answer for that.
Do you have any evidence that the Capitol attack was organized by, quote, fake Trump protesters?
We have not seen evidence of that at this stage, certainly. We have not to date seen any evidence of anarchist violent extremists or people subscribing to Antifa in connection with the 6th.
Has there so far been any evidence that the January 6th riot here, the insurrection, was organized by people simply posing as supporters of President Trump's?
We have not seen any evidence of that, certainly at this
point. Is there any evidence at all that it was organized or planned or carried out by groups like Antifa or Black Lives Matter?
We have not seen any evidence to that effect.
So, Joe, despite some fishing by Republican senators in that hearing, Director Wray laid waste to the conspiracy theories over several hours yesterday about it being Antifa on January 6th, about it being fake Trump supporters on January 6th. These are ideas that have been floated not just in dark corners of the Internet, but by sitting United States senators. And he put them all to rest yesterday.
Well, and Claire McCaskill, as you so politely said, of Ron Johnson, a man who I probably should apologize to for calling the dumbest man in the United States Senate, not because it's not true, but it's just not nice. Yeah, and maybe I shouldn't have said that. But you said in the case of Ron Johnson that Ron, and he may be the one case in the United States Senate where he just doesn't know better. He actually doesn't know better. So why don't we, as a public service to Wisconsin's struggling senator, why don't we just tick off the list really quickly, Claire, of all the conspiracy theories and all of the bogus mitigating factors that Ron and others keep trying to bring up to try to distract from the real culprit here, which was Donald Trump, Trump terrorists, seditionist Josh Hawley, and seditionist Ted Cruz. We had Wray saying, no, it wasn't Antifa. We have no evidence it was Antifa. It wasn't anarchists. No evidence there. No, it wasn't people dressing up to look like Trump supporters. Ask that twice. It wasn't people wearing disguises. He left those senators, based on all of the FBI's evidence, with the inescapable conclusion that those were Trump supporters turned Trump terrorists who committed an insurrection against the United States of America.
You think this is going to stop Ron Johnson from repeating the lie? I mean, you're talking about a Republican Senate that has embraced the biggest lie of all, that the election was somehow stolen. So, you know, it follows on kind of comfortably for them to, you know, try to get around the notion that this somehow wasn't Trump supporters that were domestic terrorists inside our nation's capital. You know, Ron Johnson, you know, Brian Williams coined a name for him the other night, Joe, which I think is great, which is Ronanon Johnson. He is going to continue to do that. I also thought it was interesting yesterday that Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley tried to somehow imply that the FBI shouldn't be employing subpoenas and gathering of metadata in order to pin down these domestic terrorists. Can you imagine them being upset if they were doing the same thing, if this had been a group of Muslim terrorists in the
exactly.
capital, or people that were Al-Qaeda? You know, this is really unbelievable that Hawley and Cruz spent their questioning time like they don't understand how prosecutions work. I mean, it's prosecution 101 that you start with trying to identify who the suspects are, and then you subpoena information to find out their motive and their plans in order to support possible criminal charges. And they were acting like this was some kind of violation of people's civil rights. I mean, they weren't focused on the terrorists that were trying to hunt down and hang the vice president of the United States. They were somehow focused that the FBI was doing a bad job. It was really just continues to be a head scratcher that everybody is not all in understanding that this is a moment we need to unite around the rule of law.
Yeah, well, and of course, Josh Hawley was worried about the metadata and using it just like, well, if you were the head of a terrorist cell and you had incited people to blow up the Pentagon, run a plane into a Pentagon or run a plane into the World Trade Centers, and you were actually sitting on a committee, you wouldn't want the FBI to use all the tools in their toolbox to figure out who was responsible. Well, in this case, I mean, we've got it on camera. We've got all of his speeches. We've got his speeches before the insurrection. We've got the little fist of his going up in the air with the bone structure of a little bird going up in the air. Yeah, there, yeah, the wee. Come on, fellas. And so we got that. And we've got him actually voting to disallow millions of votes later. And then we have him on the floor continuing to give aid and comfort to traitors and seditionists and insurrectionists with a speech even after the Capitol was vandalized and attacked, even after the terrorist attack, even after the sedition. So, of course, he's sitting there. And Josh Hawley doesn't want the FBI to use all of the tools in the toolbox to figure out who the Trump terrorists were, to draw lines between the Trump terrorists and what Josh Hawley, the seditionist, said, to draw a line between the people beating cops with American flags and what Josh Hawley said, the people racing through the Capitol screaming, "Hang Mike Pence," and tracing those people down to figure out that they too were inspired by Josh Hawley's seditious acts. We will get further and further away from this event. But it will never change the fact that Josh Hawley was responsible for these deaths that occurred on Capitol Hill, for this act of insurrection, the worst insurrection by domestic terrorists in U.S. history into our government. And he's thinking he can sit there with a straight face, ask these questions. When you look at the people, Mika, who actually supported him, Senator John Danforth, who considered himself a mentor of Josh Hawley, went around the state of Missouri asking people to vote for Josh Hawley, first as attorney general and then as a United States senator. And after this, he said, I have no doubt this was Josh Hawley's fault. But for Josh Hawley, this would have never happened. You have the Kansas City Star saying Josh Hawley must resign or be expelled because this was Josh Hawley's fault. He was responsible for this. You have the St. Louis Dispatch, the other large paper in the state, saying the same thing. People who know Josh Hawley the best know that he was responsible for these terrorist acts. He was the ringleader along with Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. So yes, he's not going to want the FBI to aggressively investigate his crime scene. That's what they're going to do.
And they are doing it. Let's bring in former Secretary of Homeland Security under President Obama, Jay Johnson, and former FBI special agent and MSNBC contributor, Clint Watts. Mr. Secretary, Jay, what did you find yesterday as the most significant parts of Chris Wray's testimony?
Well, thanks, Mika. I regard Chris Wray essentially as a straight shooter. Who's trying to do his best in a difficult job. President Biden has apparently decided to keep him on as FBI director. One of the interesting moments to me during yesterday's testimony, he was asked in so many words, what are the underlying causes of this rise of right-wing extremism, violent extremism? And he politely ducked the question. I don't think we can duck the question. There exists in this country, and there has existed in this country for my entire lifetime, a strand of America that is racist, intolerant, prone to conspiracy theories, and prone to violence. You can see it on January 6th. We saw it when school children in Little Rock, Arkansas, tried to integrate the school system there, and they were spat on and shouted at by an angry mob. But what is different now over the last 4 years is this lethal virus, if you will, has been injected with a steroid. And that steroid was our former president who said, you're special people. There's good on both sides, and encouraged them to come out from their rock. So they've received encouragement from the president of the United States at the time. We saw that in Charlottesville, and far too many politicians who refuse to denounce this same behavior. And so we are in a new mode here, a new and dangerous heightened security environment, without a doubt.
Yeah, Clint, to the secretary's point, Director Wray opened some eyes yesterday when he said the FBI currently has about 2,000 cases open on domestic terrorism. And he said it's a problem that's metastasizing around the country. Whenever we've had the chance, we've tried to emphasize this is a top concern, talking about domestic terrorism. So what was your big takeaway as you watched with your eyes yesterday? From your point of view, you've worked on cases like this. What did you see and hear yesterday?
I thought his command of the threat landscape really, Willie, was excellent. Like, he came in very prepared. It's hard to get your hands around all of those different threads and different numbers. What he was talking about, though, was a very diverse domestic terrorism landscape. If you rewind 10 years, 20 years, we were talking about international terrorism. It was two things. It was Al-Qaeda. It was the Islamic State. If you look at this domestic terrorism scene, we have a lot going on. White supremacists being the most dangerous and most numerous. His number, about the triple of a number of cases in the time he's been director, is staggering. We've probably never seen growth like that at any one period in American history. I think the second part is these militia groups. While these militia groups oftentimes pose as free speech or free protecting Second Amendment rights, there's a lot of seditionists that showed up there on January 6th. And this has been a trend that we've seen going to that Wolverine militia group in Michigan, which was essentially trying to kidnap Governor Whitmer. I think that speaks to Secretary Johnson's point about when President Trump starts squawking, his members start walking to the targets that he designates. And that's where that social media phenomenon comes together. And I think that's the last part that I think we can't stress enough, which is how conspiracies and these online sort of extremists come together over time. We've seen a lot of white supremacist attacks. 2 years ago, I would have been on here talking to you guys about El Paso, Dylan Roof, some of these shootings like this. Combine that now with the QAnon space, where we've seen the FBI and other locations around the country say, look, we've got a lot of conspiracies out here that are promoting violence. That is an almost impossible landscape to police. You're really talking about three or four large variants of domestic terrorism, a much tougher challenge when you don't have the same rules and you don't have the same capabilities. And you have a senator like Josh Hawley. Having grown up in Missouri, to hear a senator, a GOP senator from my home state, try and undermine the lawful investigation into an insurrection that he helped incite, I think that was one of the more staggering things. And I could see the almost frustration it must have been in Director Wray's head as he's trying to march on this investigation and getting these questions are really undermining trust and confidence in his ability to do that.
Well, I'm sure the other senators, even a lot of Republican senators, had to be disgusted by the fact that the guy who was responsible for the killings on that day, for police officers being brutalized with an American flag, for a police officer being held down and beaten almost to death, and believing that he was never going to get home and see his children again, for a police officer having his head bashed repeatedly in a door by Hawley mobs, by Trump mobs, by Cruz mobs. You know, these insurrectionists need to be thrown in jail and they need to be kept in jail for the maximum sentence for sedition. I mean, they need to spend 20 years in jail. And so how I'm sure Mitch McConnell was embarrassed. I'm sure Mitt Romney was embarrassed. I'm sure other Republicans were embarrassed that they actually had somebody in their own caucus that was trying to undermine the FBI investigation of an insurrection Josh Hawley was responsible for. And again, it's his closest political allies that are saying that, not me. Though I am saying it, yes, but they were the ones who said it first. Mr. Secretary, so how do we, what can the Biden administration do to make sure that those that committed insurrection against the United States, these seditionists, are actually held to the fullest extent, punished to the fullest extent of the law? We saw early on that some of these traitors, some of these terrorists, some of these seditionists were actually let out on bail, and it proved to be a big mistake, and they got pulled back into jail. What can an administration do to make sure that federal judges are given guidance to, again, punish these people to the fullest extent of the law? Because that would be deterrence that would spread around these communities and actually help prevent the next attack.
Joe, I actually don't view this as a matter for the Biden administration. I view this as a matter of basic federal criminal justice. Title 18 of the United States Code, among the most serious offenses that one can commit are acts of terrorism, acts of violent insurrection that go to the very existence of our democracy. So this will come down to a very basic choice by the FBI to use all the tools in the toolboxes to go after these guys and the basic charging decisions that our Department of Justice will make. If you charge somebody with violent acts of terrorism, the federal sentencing guidelines go through the roof, and judges will understand that. And, you know, if someone's charged properly for a violent insurrection on the Capitol that led to the death of federal law enforcement officers, they're going to spend decades in prison. And all the rest of them need to see that. You can run, but you can't hide.
Let us hope.
Former Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson and former FBI Special Agent Clint Watts, thank you both for being on this morning. And we have breaking news this morning out of Iraq. 10 rockets were fired at an Iraqi military base hosting U.S.-led coalition troops, the latest in a series of attacks in the country, and comes just days before the Pope is scheduled to visit there. The attack on an airbase northwest of Baghdad occurred at 7:20 a.m. local time. Iraqi security forces are leading the response and the investigation. Let's bring in NBC News foreign correspondent Matt Bradley. Matt, what more do we know?
Well, Mika, we really don't know much. This happened, as you mentioned, just a couple of hours ago. We heard from the Iraqi military that these were 10 Grad-style rockets that were launched at Ain al-Assad Air Base, which is a huge air base that used to house a lot of U.S. troops back in the day, back when, of course, there was the U.S. occupying force there. And then again, when they stocked up again on U.S. troops or the fight against the Islamic State. Now, ever since those numbers were drawn down, there are many, many fewer U.S. troops or coalition troops at that base. A lot of them have moved north to Erbil. What there are there, though, are a lot of drones that can be used to monitor ISIS action, as well as Iran-backed militia groups who are operating very freely in Iraq. And that's where suspicion is going to be focusing on in the next couple of days. Now, we don't know any casualties. We have no firm numbers on that. But AFP news agency, Agence France-Presse, they're reporting that at least one civilian contractor has been killed. Now, it's not clear what nationality that contractor is. But, you know, this attack was most likely retaliation for a previous U.S. attack on February 26th. That's when the Biden administration, in their first real effort to, in a first real military engagement overseas, Biden administration decided to attack positions along that Syria-Iraq border, and it killed a number of militia fighters who were there. So now we're hearing about this. The Pope, he has come out this morning and said that he will be proceeding with that trip starting on Friday. The previous concern, of course, had been COVID. Now it's security issues, guys.
So let me ask you, Matt, is it Iran? You said there's some suspicion there, but does it seem that Iran has its fingerprints all over these attacks?
It just looks that way because of, I mean, there's really nobody else to focus blame on. This has been going on for a while. This really does look like tit for tat attacks, because remember, those, that February 26th attack that the Biden administration did along the border between Iraq and Syria, that itself was retaliation for a previous attack by rockets that went against a U.S.-backed base in Iraqi Kurdistan, in the capital of Iraqi Kurdistan, in Erbil, near the international airport there. So this really does just look like yet another tit-for-tat attack. And so that's why this is going to be another, you know, we're talking about the Pope. This is also going to be really complicated for the Biden administration's stated desire to reinstate that nuclear deal with Iran, the JCPOA, the one that the Obama administration signed in 2015. And of course, Joe Biden himself had a lot to do with that. And that the Trump administration then walked away from in 2018. If these tit-for-tat attacks keep going on, if the Biden administration retaliates, we could see any effort to try to return to that nuclear deal become really, really complicated.
All right, NBC's Matt Bradley, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. You know, Willie, as long as the Iranians are trying to kill Americans and trying to kill American contractors, and they're killing American contractors, we need to respond, my opinion, not yours. But also, the last thing I'd be worried about is going back and sitting down with the Iranians and doing anything, because this country has been the epicenter of terrorism since 1979, and they keep trying to kill American troops, and they keep trying to kill American contractors.
Yeah,
I think it's okay for us to take that personally and say we're not going to sit down with terrorists while this continues.
The question is, how and where does it end? Remember, it was last January of 2020 that the United States killed General Soleimani of Iran after a tit for tat, as Matt Bradley described it, like this. And they continue to lob missiles into our bases in Iraq. So it's impossible, as you say, to have a conversation with people about an Iran nuclear deal while they continue to attack our troops in Iraq and other places. Still ahead on Morning Joe, we'll talk much more about the state of Texas and some other states lifting coronavirus restrictions right on the heels of a warning from the CDC director about opening too soon. Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who was a member of the Biden Transition COVID Advisory Board, joins our conversation with his take when Morning Joe comes right back.
It is now time to open Texas 100%.
I remain deeply concerned about a potential shift in the trajectory of the pandemic.
Everybody who wants to work should have that opportunity. Every business that wants to be open should be open.
Please hear me clearly. At this level of cases with variants spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we have gained.
Texans have mastered the daily habits to avoid getting COVID.
Now is not the time to relax the critical safeguards that we know can stop the spread of COVID-19 in our communities. not when we are so close.
We now have vaccines to protect Texans from COVID.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, responds to emergencies and provides long-term solutions for refugees. They provide aid in over 130 countries, including Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, and Sudan, where people are forced to flee from war and persecution at their greatest moment of need. UNHCR helps and protects refugees by providing food, shelter, medical care, and other life-saving essentials. The agency jumpstarts relief in three key ways. They transport core relief items stored in even the most remote areas of the world. They deploy expert emergency staff trained to help in crisis situations. And they transfer funds directly to support the emergency. Because of generous supporters and donors, UNHCR can scale up its response within 72 hours of a large-scale emergency. Your support helps provide life-saving aid for refugees whenever and wherever emergencies occur. Donate to USA for UNHCR by visiting unrefugees.org/donation.
Well, hey, it's me. I'm finally going to get my vaccine. I'm so excited. I've been waiting a while. I'm old enough to get it, and I'm smart enough to get it. So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is. And that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it, if we could get back to that. But anyhow, I just wanted to encourage everybody, because the sooner we get to feeling better, the sooner we are going to get back to being normal. So I just want to say to all of you cowards out there, don't be such a chicken squat. Get out there and get shot.
Yes, ma'am. That is the legend, Dolly Parton, getting the COVID vaccine yesterday. Dolly, you'll remember, donated $1 million to the Vanderbilt University Medical Center, which helped to fund the early critical stages of research that got us to the Moderna vaccine. In February, long after the Moderna vaccine was approved, Parton said she would join others, millions of others, in getting vaccinated, but said she was going to wait her turn. And she did just that. Yesterday, she went back to Vanderbilt and got her shot. So, Mika, the backstory on this is the gentleman there, the doctor, Abumrad, who's a friend of Dolly, she got into a car accident in 2013. She went to Vanderbilt Medical Center to recover, struck up a friendship with Dr. Abumrad. And when she heard about the development of the vaccine, when this crisis hit us a year ago, she said, how can I help? And she wrote a check for $1 million to Vanderbilt University Medical Center to help fund the Moderna vaccine. As she put it yesterday, she got a dose of her own medicine.
I love it. If you watch the whole video, she's so funny because he's sort of shuffling around, trying
around
to unwrap the shot. And she's like, now, come on, hurry up. I mean, I've got to get this shot. And you're taking so long. And it's an adorable video with an incredibly important message. Once again, Dolly Parton is amazing.
She really is. It's funny listening to her talking and the back and forth. She sounds like half the women my mom my mom knew at First Baptist Church. Come on, Amy, come on.
Shuffling them around.
Come on, don't be spied. Get the shot.
It's the best.
Sounds a lot like Barbara McVoy. That's how Barbara talks.
Oh, that is Barbara McVoy.
She's Barbara.
Joining us now, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel. He served on President Biden's COVID-19 advisory board during the transition and was President Obama's White House advisor for health policy. He's also vice provost for global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania and an NBC News and MSNBC senior medical contributor.
Thanks so much for being with us, Zeke. A lot of good news to talk about, but let's talk about the concerning news coming out of Texas. Greg Abbott obviously trying to distract from the fact that he and the Texas legislature were responsible for the deaths of so many people in Texas because they don't even know how to run an energy grid, decides to change the subject and says he's going to reopen everything 100%. What are your concerns?
Oh, this is a terrible idea. First of all, we're not anywhere near there In terms of the numbers of cases, we're at about 60,000 cases per day. We're still at about 1,100 deaths per day. We don't have enough vaccine out there to reduce the numbers enough. And we should not be rushing in to indoor dining, to indoor retail, all the things that Governor Abbott said should be 100%. It is very irresponsible. And I think the CDC director, Dr. Walensky, was exactly right. This is way premature. We did this in the spring when, you know, cases went up and then they began coming down, and just open everything up instead of waiting. We need to wait two or three more months in this very, very cautious mode, respecting all the public health measures in order to get the numbers really low and get vaccines out there.
So, you know, the really great news announced by the president yesterday comes while, you know, America obviously is still suffering from this in the throes of it. Well over 500,000 people dead. At one point, do you think we will see the vaccine start impacting the death rate and the hospitalization rate?
It's hard to know, and modeling is very different, but probably when we have 25% of the population, and again, concentrating it in nursing homes where we have a lot of at-risk people and people over 65, where about 80% of the deaths are, that is going to make a big difference. And we have seen the deaths in nursing homes and assisted living facilities come way down. And that's very gratifying. I think for the whole population, it's going to take a little longer because we have to get up there.
Zeke, can you speak to the significance of that deal yesterday announced by the Biden administration between Johnson & Johnson and Merck? Obviously, two major rivals in the pharmaceutical industry getting together, and Merck saying, you can use a couple of our facilities. We will help make this product to get it out. Yes, it's your product. We didn't get to the vaccine, but we want to get this out to as many people as we can. How big a deal is that?
So first of all, it's very gratifying that Merck is stepping up. You know, when you have the emergency the size of the pandemic, all hands on deck, and Merck is doing that. On the other hand, we should be a little cautious. It takes about 2 months to ferment to get the vaccine, and then you have to fill and finish. That is, put it in the glass vials, make sure the glass vials aren't contaminated with anything, stop them up, and that takes another 5 weeks. If Merck started tomorrow, it would still be about three and a half months before we'd see a Merck-produced vaccine out there in distribution. I think everyone's a little disappointed by the Johnson & Johnson production timeline. They were supposed to have 37 million doses delivered to the government by the end of March, but they'll only have about half that, 20 million doses. And so they're doing everything they can, but we shouldn't expect a Merck product out there for vaccination before, call it mid-June.
Zeke, we also got word yesterday that we're going to hear tomorrow from the CDC about some new guidance about people who've had vaccines. And that will be, if you're indoors, say at a home or a restaurant with people that you know have been vaccinated, it's okay to sit there with your mask on. Does that sound right to you? And what should people take from that guidance we expect to hear?
It does sound right to me, but I think it's a little baby step. I mean, the most common question I get is, when can I hug my grandchildren?
Yeah.
And I'm getting this all over the email. Lots of people I know, this is what I'm doing. And then they want to know, is that all right? I do think that getting vaccinated, and by the way, if you're getting the vaccine, you have to wait 2 weeks afterwards for the immune system to respond. And then going with people who are also vaccinated, that is probably pretty safe. No risk. You don't take all the risk off the table. But I think that is good. You can probably also fly with a mask on. Don't eat the food. Don't take the mask off and keep your mask on and fly and be relatively safe. Again, it's a relative safeness. But I think we have to remember, wear the mask. If you can do things outdoors comfortably, do them outdoors comfortably. Make sure you're in a well-ventilated room if you are going indoors. And I don't think we should, again, rush to indoor dining because you don't know about everyone else in a restaurant, right, or a bar or a hair salon. And so we need to be prudent about what we do and take it in small steps. But I do think that, seeing other people indoors, everyone who's been vaccinated and waited 2 weeks after a vaccine is probably okay.
All right, Dr. Zeke Emanuel, thank you very, very much once again for being on with us. He's the author of the book, Which Country Has the World's Best Healthcare? And still ahead, a cabinet-level defeat for President Biden. The White House pulls Neera Tanden's nomination for OMB director amid bipartisan opposition in the Senate. Plus, Russia is vowing retaliation after being hit with new sanctions by the Biden administration. We'll get to that latest reporting. Morning Joe will be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
51 past the hour, the scope of the investigation into allegations leveled against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is expected to be wide-ranging. The New York Times reports the independent team hired by the state's Attorney General Letitia James will have far-reaching subpoena powers to request documents and compel witnesses, including the governor, to testify under oath. The probe may also scrutinize not just the two sexual harassment claims made by former female employees, but any other potential allegations as well. The governor has acknowledged that some of the things he said may have been misinterpreted as an unwanted flirtation and apologized, but denies ever inappropriately touching anyone. And more Democratic lawmakers are coming out in support of the independent investigation into these growing number of allegations made against Governor Cuomo.
These allegations are very serious against Governor Cuomo, made by serious individuals, and deserve a serious and independent investigation.
I associate myself with the gentleman's remarks.
I know the Attorney General will conduct a thorough investigation that will be totally, totally independent without any interference, outside interference, political or otherwise.
I can certainly speak on behalf of the President and the Vice President. And so let me reiterate that they both believe that every woman coming forward should be heard, should be treated with dignity and treated with respect.
In a statement, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said in part, quote, the behavior described in these allegations against Governor Cuomo is completely unacceptable and every allegation of sexual harassment must be taken seriously and be reviewed. Meanwhile, six New York State legislators said yesterday that Cuomo should resign following a third woman's allegation of unwanted advances. Cuomo's office has not commented on the latest accusation. Protesters also held a rally outside the governor's Manhattan office as pressure mounts for him to resign.
So Claire McCaskill, a very interesting op-ed by Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times this morning, saying that she suspects that Andrew Cuomo will survive this in part because Democrats are still angry that Al Franken got pushed out, and they've taken the attitude that we don't need to Franken Cuomo, saying, why is it that Democrats always react this way? While you had Donald Trump in the White House with 21 claims of sexual harassment against him,
including one of rape.
And yeah, and Republicans never once demanded investigations into Donald Trump. It was It's an interesting take. And talked about, we had Kristen Gillibrand's name there. Michelle Goldberg talks about anger towards Kristen Gillibrand, actually, for taking the lead in pushing Al Franken out of the United States Senate.
Well, first of all, I mean, the prosecutor in me wants to point out that the facts and circumstances around both cases are much different. And let me just say some obvious truths here. This is the governor of New York who had a woman young enough to be his daughter in his office, the two of them alone. And he asked her if she had sex with older men. And then he had the nerve to say he was apologizing if his comments had been misinterpreted as flirtation. Well, I got news for you. If you have a position of power over a young woman, a very young woman compared to your age, and you ask her if she has sex with older men, you ought to be man enough to say you did something terribly wrong. Not, I'm sorry if it was misinterpreted. He should have said, hey, my life is I don't know if his personal life is a mess, but if he'd been honest and just said, I did things I shouldn't have done, and it is terrible I did them, and I will do better. And I ask for forgiveness from the women that I have abused by sexually harassing them with the things I've talked to them about and my actions. But instead, if it's been misinterpreted as an unwanted flirtation, I mean, I'm like, it's infuriating. That wasn't an apology. That was a rationalization. So, you know, I just to everybody out there, if you are old enough to be a woman's daughter and you're her boss, don't ask her if she likes to have sex with older women. It's not complicated.
I think you nailed it. What's upsetting here is not just the alleged story of what happened, but the apology. And the apology appears to have actually caused a firestorm and then a second and a third allegation. So the problems continue, I think, because of the rationalization or even shaping the behavior to be something that it isn't. Sometimes you've just really messed up. Sometimes your behavior is just inappropriate and you just need to say it. It's pretty easy. And it'd be interesting to see how bad the reaction would be if he actually said, this is what I did and it was really bad and I'm really sorry. We'll have to wait to see how the investigation bears out. These are allegations at this point, but there certainly are now, starting with one, two, now three, backed up by a picture. So it's a tough situation. Coming up, President Biden doesn't just have to tackle a pandemic. He also has to manage Americans' expectations for when the coronavirus crisis will end. The AP's Jonathan Lemire joins us with his latest reporting. Morning, Joe. We'll be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.